Corinthians chapter 11. Second Corinthians 11, you'll recall we're in the last section of Second Corinthians, talking about the vindication of Paul's office. Paul is arguing in favor of his apostleship here in this section. We're in the second part of that section, the apostolic boasting part, and we're finally going to get to Paul's boasting. He's been threatening to boast now since chapter 11, verse 1, and now that we're down in verse 22, he's finally going to get to the actual boasting itself. He's been apologizing for having to boast and talking about boasting and saying it's not really a very nice thing to do, but now he's finally going to get to it. You'll recall the reason he's boasting is because the Corinthians responded to boasting, and they had responded to the boasting of the false apostles, and now Paul said the only way I can defend my apostleship is by boasting as well. So he's going to start now, and we'll be looking at verses 22 down through the end of the chapter in chapter 11. So let's read those verses to start, starting at 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I more so, in far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure upon me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? If I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, He who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. In Damascus, the church, under Aretas the king, was guarding the city of the Damascenes in order to seize me. And I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and so escaped his hand. We can outline this section that we're looking at into a few parts, make it a little easier to get our arms around it. First, we're going to look at external pressure in verses 22 through 27, and Paul will start out by saying that he's equal to these false apostles. That's verse 22, and we have the words in verse 22 when he says, "So am I," and that's showing that Paul is equal to these false apostles. And then he's going to go on in 23 through 27 to show that not only is he equal to them, he is superior to them. And we'll look at that from 3 standpoints, from Paul's suffering, from his dangers, and his hardships. And those are just kind of convenient ways to break this down. And then in verses 28 and 29, Paul turns from external pressures to internal pressures. And then in verse 30, we'll see the uniqueness of Paul's boasting. And this verse really, it's kind of shocking and surprising. After all Paul had been through, and after all he'd suffered, and all he'd survived, what he brags about or boasts about in verse 30, he says, if I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. Now, most people wouldn't see it that way. Most people would say, I've been through a lot for the Lord. Boy, I'm a super Christian. Paul says, no, I'm going to boast about my weakness. So a very unique boast. And then in verses 31 through 33, Paul will relate a final remarkable story. And this story is going to be kind of the ultimate indignity that Paul suffered. And we'll see that indignity plays a large part in the suffering of Paul. So first, let's start out back at verse 22 then and look at the details. Paul starts out by claiming equality with the false apostles. Verse 22, he says, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. So obviously Paul's opponents had been boasting of their Hebrew blood. And they had apparently questioned Paul's authenticity as a Hebrew. Now remember, Paul was born in Tarsus, and sometimes a true Jerusalem Hebrew would look down on one from another city. And in fact, in the first century, there was a group called the Ebionites, and they claimed emphatically that Paul was a Gentile. He couldn't have been a Jew. So Paul was being attacked on the very basis of his Judaism. Now, Paul looks at his equality to these guys in three ways now. First, in terms of language, he says, are they Hebrews? So am I. He spoke Hebrew, and in fact, the term Hebrew is one that emphasized a pure-blooded Jew, not one who was a proselyte, but a pure-blooded Jew. In terms of relationship to God, he says, are they Israelites? So am I. Israel is the Hebrew word for having power with God. And then in terms of relationship to Messiah, or in terms of lineage, he says, are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. So Paul's relationship to Messiah was no less than theirs. His lineage was as good as any other Jew. So they were attacking him because of that. Now don't get the mistaken idea that this makes any difference spiritually. But Paul is just pointing out that these false apostles had accused him of not being a Jew. Well, he can defend that. Yes, I am. And apparently these false apostles were Judaizers. And you can see how much emphasis they had placed on their Jewish lineage or heritage. Now, the truth about Paul's opponents comes out in verse 23. Verse 23 says, are they servants of Christ? And when he says this, you can see from the context that we'll be going into that calling his opponents servants of Christ, he's doing this just for the sake of argument. And we noticed before, back at verse 13, for example, that these men are not servants of Christ. Verse 13 says, for such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. Now Paul, he's going to say, are they servants of Christ? For the sake of argument, we'll say they are. You know what? I'm even more so. And that's what he says in verse 23. He says, are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I more so. So Paul, again, as he's done since chapter 11, verse 1, is apologizing for his boasting. He says, I speak as if insane. The boasting that Paul is about to do now is completely out of character for him. And this is his last apology as he goes into his actual boasting. He says, I speak as if insane. For a Christian minister to speak about what he's had to endure, Paul considers insane. Because Paul has learned to take the long view. And we'll look at that next hour. So what Paul is going to point out in these verses, and we'll find when we get down to verse 30 through 33, he's pointing out his suffering, but he's pointing it out to highlight God's grace. He's not going to point it out so much to highlight his power in enduring suffering. He's going to point out God's grace in letting him endure suffering. His motive in boasting is to glorify God. Remember what his opponent's motive in boasting was? It was to glorify themselves. Remember back at verse 18, it says, since many boast, according to the flesh. In other words, they were boasting to glorify themselves and not to glorify God. Paul is going to boast now. His boasting is going to be to glorify God. Now, as we go into this section that deals with his boasts in particular, we'll notice some things before we start. First, many of the things that we see here, these items of suffering, are not recorded in the book of Acts. Now, we can infer from that we know very little about what Paul actually suffered. Because he says here things that aren't recorded in the book of Acts. So Acts does not list all of Paul's suffering. Also, there are incidents in the book of Acts that aren't recorded here. So that means that this is not a complete list of Paul's suffering. So if you put those two facts together and think about it a little, we'll see that we only scratch the surface of what Paul actually suffered. Let's get into the items of boasting then. First, he says in verse 23, in far more labors. And he kind of starts out slowly and he'll get going as he gets rolling. Far more labors. Labors is the Greek word kapos. Kapos means to work to the point of exhaustion. So he's labored to the point of exhaustion far more times than his opponents down in Corinth. Remember, they were paid for what they did. He was not. Far more imprisonments. We have a record in the book of Acts of five of Paul's imprisonments. And when he wrote 2 Corinthians, probably only the first one had taken place. So he had only been in prison one recorded time when he wrote this. So I guess we can say from that he was in prison more times than is recorded in the book of Acts, because he's already saying he's had far more imprisonments than his opponents. So he suffered imprisonments that aren't recorded. Beaten times without number. That's pretty self-explanatory. Often in danger of death. When we get down to verse 25, we'll see an example of one of those times. Verse 25, it says, three times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned. And that would be an example of being in danger of death. And literally, that reads in verse 23, often in danger of death, literally means, reads in death often, or in deaths often. Five times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. This is a strictly Jewish form of punishment. So he says, I received from the Jews 39 lashes. And it's kind of interesting the way they came up with that number. The Mosaic law states that the maximum number of lashes that can be administered is 40. And literally, if you read in the text, it says 40 minus 1. It doesn't really say 39. It says 40 minus 1. And the reason they did that is, being Jews like they were and being strict adherents of the Mosaic law, they said, okay, the Mosaic law says we could administer 40 lashes. What if I miscount and accidentally administer 41? I'll be in violation of the Mosaic law. I better back off one just in case I count wrong. And that's how they came up with the 40 minus 1 lashes, or the 39 lashes. Three times I was beaten with rods. Beaten with rods is the Gentile form of punishment. So he got it from both sides, Jews and Gentiles, and he's going to say that in a minute, that he, no matter where he went, no matter where he proclaimed the gospel, he got in trouble for it. Now, this is kind of interesting in that when he says three times I was beaten with rods, and that's the Gentile form of punishment, technically Paul was a Roman citizen and he was protected by law from this kind of treatment. In fact, I think that sheds a little light on, if you look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, 1 Thessalonians 2, we can start at verse 1 in 1 Thess chapter 2. He says, for you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you was not in vain, but we had already suffered and had been mistreated in Philippi. Mistreated. He had protection against that kind of treatment, but you know what? They treated him that way anyhow. So he calls it mistreatment. So his message was offensive to Jews and Gentiles alike. Everywhere he went, when he proclaimed the gospel, he got in trouble for it. He was beaten by the Jews, beaten by the Gentiles. Now he goes on to say, back in 2 Corinthians 11, 23, or 25, he says, three times I was beaten with rod, once I was stoned. And stoned is the customary form of execution. for Jews. So he's saying that they actually they thought they executed him. Look at Acts 14. Acts chapter 14, we find the account of him being stoned. Now, if you're like me and grew up in the 1960s and early 70s, the word stoned has a little different meaning from what it did to in Paul's day. That they meant literally throwing rocks at him. I thought I'd clarify that for any other aging hippies in the group. Acts chapter 14, and in verse 19, it says, "But Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, and having won over the multitudes, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. But while the disciples stood around him, he arose and entered the city. And the next day he went away with Barnabas to Derbe." So they executed Paul. You see why he says in death often? And they executed him. Now it didn't take, as you can see. And actually, when next hour I'll point out that some commentators say that he was actually dead and was resurrected. And chapter 12 of 2 Corinthians talks about that, but we'll get to that next hour. So back to 2 Corinthians, he was at least left for dead, supposed to be dead. "Three times I was shipwrecked," he goes on to say. The nine sea voyages recorded in Acts that probably would have taken place before he wrote this. So out of the nine sea voyages, he was shipwrecked three times. "A night and the day I have spent in the deep." So apparently on one of those shipwrecks, he had to cling to a piece of wreckage or something until he was rescued. Now notice in these sufferings the indignity involved. Hanging onto a piece of wreckage in the ocean until he was rescued. We'll get to the ultimate indignity in this final story that he gives here about being lowered in a basket. But now let's move on to Paul's dangers. Verse 26, on frequent journeys. And we have to stop and back up a minute here. What do you mean, frequent journeys? He took a lot of vacations. Is that bad? Why does he put this in a list of suffering? Because we think of journeys as being kind of fun, don't we? Well, let's hop in the car and go somewhere. Well, remember, Paul's journeys were on foot. In Paul's day, traveling was kind of taking your life in your own hands, and he's going to say why following here. Where did those dangers come from in traveling? Well, dangers from rivers. Here again, we have to put ourselves back in Paul's culture. When we hop in the car and drive south, we cross the Missouri River, no big deal. Just bomb right on across in the car. Well, think about it from Paul's standpoint. If you were on a walking journey and you came up to the Missouri River, that'd be kind of intimidating. Would be for me, and I bet it would especially be for Ruth, who doesn't like water very well. But think of it, walking up onto a raging river on foot. So traveling was not quite as convenient back in Paul's day. Robbers, he says, dangers from robbers. Robbers is a word that means one who uses weapons and violence in robbing others. We would probably say armed robbers. In our culture, we have a little more descriptive term. Armed robbers, guys who use weapons. And as we go through these, now he gets to dangers from my countrymen and dangers from the Gentiles. Remember, when Paul wrote 2 Corinthians, he was roughly halfway through his career. So this is only half of it. And even so, we don't have all the facts. We don't have all of his sufferings. But what we do know is that this is only half, at the very least. So dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles. And again, no matter who he proclaimed the gospel to, he was always in trouble over it. Dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea. No matter where he went, no matter who he talked to, he was in trouble for the gospel. Dangers among false brethren. Now, The other dangers that we had threatened Paul's life and his property. This one threatens his very ministry. And the group of false apostles down in Corinth were among this group. They were the false brethren. Remember, verse 13, he says, "For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, is it not surprising if his servants..." So they're servants of Satan. So they were the false brethren, disguising themselves as apostles of light. Now in verse 27, Paul goes on to talk about his hardships. Verse 27 says, "I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure." In labor and hardships refers to Paul's having to work a job so as not to be a burden to the Corinthians. This same expression, we find it over in 1 Thessalonians 2:9. Look over there because he gives a little more explanation of what he's talking about. 1 Thessalonians 2:9. In verse 9, he gives a little more explanation. He says, "For you recall, brethren, our labor and hardship," and there's that same expression again, and he goes on to explain it, "how working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaimed to you the gospel of God." So what he's talking about is working a job so that he could proclaim the gospel. 2 Thessalonians 3:8, another example. Start at verse 7. It says, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with labor and hardship we kept working night and day so that we might not be a burden to any of you." So in order to not burden the churches, Paul worked a job so he could proclaim the gospel. Now the things that follow in verse 27 kind of flow from that. First he says, through many sleepless nights, working a secular job full-time and conducting a ministry requires a lot of midnight oil. Remember, his opponents were paid for what they did. He was not. So he had to work a full-time job and then prepare his classes. And that's a strain. Sleepless nights. He says, "in hunger and thirst, often without food." Now, this is kind of an interesting phrase, isn't it? He says, "in hunger and thirst, often without food." What's the difference between hunger and without food? There is a difference. The words without food, that word is often translated fasting instead of hunger, fasting. So I take it that what he's talking about here is that hunger refers to going hungry because he doesn't have the funds to buy food, and without food is going hungry because he doesn't have time to eat, or fasting, as we would translate it. Not necessarily because he can't afford food, he just doesn't have time to eat. So he says, often in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Exposure is literally nakedness. Look at 2 Timothy 4:13. You recall 2 Timothy is Paul's last epistle, the last letter that we have recorded. And he's writing to Timothy, and he's kind of telling Timothy to carry the torch, keep going. Kind of passing his ministry over to Timothy. And at chapter 4, verse 13, he talks about Timothy coming to see him, and he says, "When you come, bring the cloak which I left at Troas with Carpus, and the books, especially the parchments. Now here's Paul writing to Timothy, said, look, when you come, would you bring my coat? Now if I was in a place far away and it was cold, I'd probably run out and buy a coat if I forgot mine. I forgot to bring my coat, I'll go buy one. But at the end of Paul's ministry, apparently he still couldn't afford to buy a cloak. He had to write to Timothy and said, bring my cloak along. So even at the very end of his ministry, he still hadn't progressed financially. If you look at Paul's ministry through human viewpoint eyes, you'll find that, boy, this guy was an abysmal failure, wasn't he? Here he was at the end of his ministry. He couldn't even afford a coat. Wow, what a failure. And, of course, if we look at it from divine viewpoint, Paul was the most successful Christian that ever lived. He believed the New Testament. And yet he couldn't afford a coat. Back to 2 Corinthians then. Now Paul, in verse 28, turns to boasting about internal pressures. Verse 28 says, apart from such external things, there's the daily pressure upon me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? So apart from all of this, here's Paul saying, you know what? There's that internal pressure all the time of the churches. He had empathy with his churches. As he says in verse 29, who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? So apart from everything else, he had to worry about the churches. Now remember, he's comparing himself with these false apostles. And I presume that they didn't spend a whole lot of time worrying. They probably spent their time raising funds. You know, forming committees, that sort of thing. They didn't worry. So when we get to verse 30 then, we find the uniqueness of Paul's boasting. Verse 30, if I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. Now again, that's the number one thing Paul is going to boast about, his own weakness. And put yourself in Paul's place. And I've tried to do this. I sit down and I think, boy, if I had been through all of Paul had been through to this time in 2 Corinthians, and I survived, I persevered, I know what I'd want to boast about. Boy, I've been through it, and I'm a great soldier for the Lord, you know. I'm so cool. Paul doesn't do that. He boasts about his own weakness, and we'll find next hour the reason for that is because human weakness forms a perfect background or backdrop for God's power. So if Paul is weak and he survives these trials or these pressures, he can say, that's supernatural. And it's obviously supernatural because I'm just a weak human. Paul is going to say, I'm just a regular guy, and yet I survived all that. It's undeniable proof of God's power. Now, I take it the super apostles or his opponents down in Corinth weren't running around saying they were normal guys. In fact, they probably wouldn't call themselves super apostles if they were normal guys. Their pride was in their own power. Now, Paul says, my pride is in God's power. Now, look at verse 31, and there's some controversy about what verse 31 refers to. And some people say verse 31 is looking back at what Paul says, as what Paul has just said. In verse 31, it says, the God and the Father of the Lord Jesus Christ, he who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. And some commentators say that Paul is looking back over what he's just said and saying, I'm not lying, this is true. This all really happened. But I think the context kind of indicates that it goes with what's to come, what he's about to say in verse 32 and 33, because this is the remarkable story. This is kind of sums up everything. It's the ultimate indignity, and it also leads into chapter 12 by providing the ultimate contrast for chapter 12. Because look at chapter 12, verse 1. He goes on. He says, boasting is necessary, though it is not profitable, but I will go on to visions and revelations. And he's going to talk about something very, very dramatic, very exciting, and very positive in chapter 12, but he's going to lead into that with the contrast of the ultimate indignity. Now, the commentators who say that verse 31 goes with what Paul has been saying before, when they explain verse 32 and 33, they'll say, well, that's an afterthought. Paul had got down through all his boasting. He said, I'm not lying. And then, oh, by the way, in Damascus, and I don't think that fits. That's not Paul's style, really. I think he's said what he said in verse 31 to introduce this final story because it's so remarkable. The question is then, why was it so significant to Paul, or why is it so remarkable? Well, if we look back, we see, and we'll look at it in the book of Acts. Whoops, my notes went away. And it's in Acts chapter... Oh, my notes went away. Okay, somebody, help me out here. Okay, Acts chapter 9, that's right. Okay, Acts chapter 9. Let's go back and get the background for what he's about to say. And we'll see it occurred reasonably early in his ministry. So it was his first taste of real suffering. Acts 9:25. Okay. Hang on. I'm right there. Okay, starting at verse 23, it says, and when many days had elapsed, the Jews plotted together to do away with him. But their plot became known to Saul, and Saul is Paul, of course, and they were also watching the gates day and night so that they might put him to death. But his disciples took him by night and led him down through an opening in the wall, lowering him in a large basket. So there's Paul's ultimate expression of indignity. They put him in a basket and lowered him out the window with a rope. Now stop and think. Paul, you know, the one who wrote most of the New Testament. Think of taking one of the, you know, think of the President of the United States. What would it do to his image if he was put in a basket and lowered out a window to get away from somebody that was trying to kill him? And that wouldn't do a whole lot for the image, you know. That wouldn't do a whole lot for the self-esteem either. But Paul boasts about it over in 2 Corinthians, and this was early in his ministry. Now, I tried to think, what would I have done if that would have happened to me early in my ministry? I'd probably be still in the secular world. Paul wasn't that way, and I think next hour we're going to see an explanation of why not. So, verse 32, he says, in Damascus, the ethnarch under Aretas, the king, was guarding the city of the Damascenes in order to seize me. And I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and so escaped his hands. So there's Paul's boasting, and he ends up with this final remarkable story where he was lowered in a basket out a window. But now when we get to chapter 12, where we'll pick up next hour, he's going to turn to something very remarkable and very positive, and that's the visions and revelations. And in fact, they're going to be so remarkable that he's not even going to claim them for himself, although I think we'll see that he's talking about himself in chapter 12. So we'll pick up there next hour. Father, thank you for your word, which is living and powerful. Thank you for the section in 2 Corinthians. And thank you for the Apostle Paul, and thank you for giving him the grace to endure all this so that we can have your word. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.